Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Happy Mama Movement podcast. I'm Amy Taylor Cabaz, mama, journalist, coach, and founder of Mama Rising. This podcast is a space of community and collaboration. We gather stories of matrescence, motherhood, womanhood, and change told by our Mama Rising coaches and mothers around the globe, in the knowing that through our stories, we can begin to heal and change the way the world sees, values, and supports mothers everywhere. So, welcome to the Happy Mama Movement. And welcome to our special partner series. I have been exploring, researching, and coaching mothers around motherhood for more than a decade. And during that time, so often get asked, what about the partner? Is there something called patrescence? Do they go through similar identity shifts? What do dads feel as they become fathers? And how can we understand that experience better? And that is what this special series is dedicated to. I searched for three experts to explore different aspects of partnering as you become a partner and a parent. And this is what I am so excited to share with you today. And in this second episode of this special series, I speak with Dr. Sonal Patel, mother of four, pediatrician, and specialist of supporting parents as they become parents. She now goes into homes and hears the stories of both mother and father. And in this interview, explores what happened with her partner as they become parents, and also how a father's identity shifts and changes, very similar to our experience of matrescence. Welcome, everybody, to another one of our episodes in our special partner series. Today, we are answering the question, is there something called patrescence? A question I have been asked for so many years as I speak about matrescence. And when I wanted to find the answer to this question, that inquiry led me to the work of Dr. Sonal Patel, who is a certified pediatrician, a neonatologist, a breastfeeding specialist, an author, a TEDx speaker, and mama of four boys, which definitely makes you an expert in this area. Thank you so much for joining me for this really exciting and important conversation.
Thank you for having me. This is fun. It's a nice switch also to talk about the partners, the non-birthing, the dads, all of that.
Yes, it is such a... It's such an important conversation to have. Over the years, I've often had, as I said, my own answer to that question, but have also been quite adamant that I wanted to stay in my lane, quite adamant that I think in this space, in my work, let's talk about the experience of becoming a mother because so much needs to change in that area. But then the further along I have got in this conversation, I realize that We do need to understand the other side of the experience. We do need to be able to recognize that in a way the system is not working for anybody here. In a way, we're not acknowledging the change of identity, the change of our hormones and experience in either of the parents in this conversation, which has led me to want to talk about this now. So first of all, Tell us a little bit about you and your work and your experience of becoming a mother through Matrescence.
Yes. Well, again, thank you for having me here. I am married to my college sweetheart, and that is a very important key in all of this and learning about more about Matrescence. He is also a physician. He's a trauma orthopedics physician, and we both started our training at the same time. We had our first boy in residency, and that really forced the conversations to happen. And so we can dive in a little more deeper. Then our second one was after fellowship. Both of us had fellowships, so both of us had 6 years of full training that happened. And we had decided, well, one was fine during the training, and we would wait until we had a little bit more the fallacy of control of our schedule, in which there's never a control of anyone's schedule in any career. And so then we added our three other boys. One of the biggest jolts in one of our pregnancies and postpartum was with the delivery of my third baby. And when he was 4 weeks old, my husband's dad suffered a major stroke, and my husband was literally would be at with us the week and then would travel down. We live in Denver, Colorado. They used to live in Little Rock, Arkansas, which is about 2.5 hour flight, and would travel down there on the weekends and then come back up. And here I was, postpartum, 4 weeks out, two older kiddos with a third at that. And that was very challenging, to say the least. And then when we had our fourth also, he came early. And so usually my husband, I don't know where everyone is at listening, but the United States sucks at paid family leave. So let's just kind of blanket it there. So we had kind of figured out how he could have some leave. However, with my baby coming early, he didn't have control of when he could take the leave. And it was those kind of pivotal time periods in my own journey of being postpartum, coming into Matrescence, coming into motherhood, really forced us to have big conversations when we weren't ready for it. You know, I mean, I just remember I was just so hurt that we were in a situation where we had our third and he wasn't there supporting me. And it wasn't that he was going out to go like with his friends. He literally was trying to balance. And I know I've said hurtful things to him during that time because we've had open conversations with it. And finally, you know, when you kind of step away from all the stuff that we've kind of gone through, you can have those conversations in a more safer time period where emotions aren't running high and really understand what your partner is going through.
In this special series that I've been doing, we've approached it from two ways. One is, how can my partner understand what I'm going through, what Matrescence is? How can they understand why I might be angry all the time, or why I seem to be resentful, why these emotions are coming up, to try and really put it in perspective how Matrescence changes us as the birthing parent? And then on the other side, the intention of this series was to do the opposite, to allow all of the mamas that listen to this podcast around the world to try and understand with some compassion how that's changing for them as well, what that perspective is. So looking back at that huge variety of becoming a parent, those huge different experiences you've had over the last 18 years, because your eldest is now 18, when you think about his perspective and having had those conversations, what do you understand now? What do you see this experience of becoming a father has been like?
What I see is that there is so much more other pressure that he was facing, that there is a financial pressure of keeping everything afloat, and also just making sure that his wife was fine, the ability to take a moment to enjoy his son. Sometimes those moments were stolen from him. And it allowed space to kind of relook even in my own work of how I counsel families as well, moving forward. But those were the big things. I mean, it really kind of, it pained me and hurt me, especially with our third, that he didn't have those opportunities where he could just do some skin to skin or he could just breathe. I think some of that aspects of it was really hard. When you add clinical and medical terms to it, we know that fathers, about 10% of them, do go through depression, and their symptoms are quite different than what mothers will go through. So their symptoms come out to be anger, to making really rash decisions, to making, to being secluded. Because the other thing that in those conversations that we've had also, and my husband was looking for a mentor that might have gone through the same thing that he's gone through. And there's a lack of support that way. You know, we kid and we're like, oh, you know, the dad is, you know, we joke and say, oh, we see the dad in the park with the baby. And we're like, oh my God, the dad's in the park with the baby. However, we forget that might be the only outlet they have, because they don't have this outlet to be like, we have mommy groups. We have the ability to just be like, okay, this motherhood thing sucks right now. But they sometimes might not have the ability or even a pathway to voice it. Now my work, I've actually transitioned to being a home health physician, a fourth trimester physician, where we just focus on fourth trimester care and bringing medical care home. And I remember this dad. So this is, we had done it the second time. This was their second baby. And we did the first appointment. Everything was going fine. Second appointment, everything was going fine. We do it at the house. So we have about 60 to 75 minutes. So it's not in a clinic. It's at their home, which is really amazing and just an amazing opportunity to do that with my families. And this dad, now that he's gotten comfortable with me, and he literally at the end of the appointment is like, Dr. Patel, I'm not doing well. And what had happened is that his baby had come out blue. It was a vaginal delivery. The baby had come out blue. The neonatal team was there. They had resuscitated the baby greatly. It was within a couple of minutes, nothing major. But he could not get that picture out of his head, that he had literally, his baby had come out basically, in his words, dead. And it was just so powerful for like, I recognized what position I was in, that he was comfortable enough to telling me that I saw this. And then they were working on my wife and they're working on my baby, and I didn't know where to turn. And I'm having a really hard time now. This is 3 weeks out, 3 to 4 weeks out. I'm having a really hard time. And those are the experiences and the conversations that, like you had mentioned, we barely do a good job with moms in supporting them. But those are the conversations that aren't happening. And then we have higher rates of miscommunication, higher rates of, you know, people just being angry at each other and not realizing that there is so much growth that is happening within, not only individually, but also in a relationship. So those are some powerful things that I've come across.
Yes. And in my work, we look at what we call the wheel of matrescence. This is part of the Mama Rising training that I teach and I do, where we look at how this experience of matrescence changes all these different areas of your life, almost like a wheel of life. And when you look at that for the non-birthing partner or the father, the dad, it's the same thing, that this experience of becoming a father now, of becoming a parent, has now changed every area of their life. It's how they feel differently about their work. They feel differently about themselves. They worry about whether they're going to be a good role model. What if they didn't have a great dad? And they worry about how they're going to do it differently. They worry about the world and whether it's a safe place and all of these things. And like we said, we don't do this well for mums, but we definitely don't do it well for the dads. And so often I've heard the stories, especially in doing this special series, that dads almost more than mums are expected to return to work within days sometimes. And everyone like slaps them on the back and says, well done, mate. How's the baby? Good, great. And then you just get back to work. Nothing else changes. and everything is beginning to change inside of them. So can you talk to us about that change of putrescence? What is going on? What does the science and also your own experience of listening to all of these fathers and these parents over the years, what is changing within them in this time?
Yes. So to add all to that, remember the dads also went through COVID. We all went through COVID as a world. So we did unearth so many more mental issues and isolation. And so these fathers are coming from that area as well. I always joke that oxytocin is a hormone, it's a love hormone, right? It's what puts you in this position. And when dads do skin to skin, really amazing literature that comes from the kangaroo care in the NICUs, where you can see, even if the dads are doing the skin to skin, where the vital signs stabilize of that baby is responsive to the dads. Oxytocin is increased in the dads. It's a love hormone. He has to. His all the stuff that identifies love, you know, dilating of the eyes and just feeling good inside, all of those things can be measured, but we don't really have to measure them. We can clinically see them as well. We don't always have to have invasive blood work to be like, hey, you love your child. All of that is occurring. But then we put this non-birthing parent in a situation where all the other stressors are coming for them, right? We talk about them going back to work. Fine, they go back to work, but then they're coming back in a situation where, you know, the baby doesn't sleep all night. They're trying to support their wife. They might have older kiddos. They're trying to take them to their soccer practice. They're trying to take them to school. Like simple things like that are the stressors that they are going through. And so their changes are not also happening in a vacuum. Then at the end of the time, they're looking to connect with their partner in a meaningful way, not a sexual way, in a meaningful way. And no one's giving them direction because we haven't allowed giving our moms the permission to be like, okay, it's okay to take a minute for yourself. And it's okay to kind of foster this relationship. So one of the things that I do is once 2 weeks have hit after birth, I call it survival mode. I'm like, you guys are in survival mode. Throw everything out. Order whatever food you want. You're in survival mode. But about 2 weeks or so, people are starting to get a little bit more of their bearings down. And I really advocate for coffee dates, which are 10 to 15 minutes. And they can be as simple as going out on the porch and getting some sun for both of you guys. Two, if you have someone, if you have members, if you have doulas, if you have family members in your home at the time, really stepping out for 10 to 15 minutes, going down to your local coffee shop and just enjoying a coffee drink. I don't advocate for lunch. It's just too much pressure. I don't advocate for dinner. It's just too much pressure on the moms, you know, and the dads are like, oh, I would love to take, I remember this so much. I had with my second, I had a grade 3 and a grade 4 tear. And it was Valentine's Day was coming up. And my husband wanted to take me to Valentine's. So this is about, I was about 4 weeks post. And he had one of my favorite restaurants, you know, put it there, did all this work, brought me flowers. And I was miserable the whole time because it hurt. I didn't want to get glamored up. I didn't feel good in my body. And then on my husband's side, he wanted to appreciate me to things that he's done for me or what I've gone through, but there was such a disconnect there. And so that's what I say too, is like, you know, initially coffee dates, because here's the deal. You come back together in a relationship and breastfeeding and being involved as a parent, that's going to be breastfeeding, particularly breastfeeding, because that kind of sucks a lot of our time out. That's going to be such a short amount of time with parenting this child. But when you start having coffee dates and establishing those relationships and establishing the fact that your relationship is important, then you come together as parents. And then you can be, when they are 9 years old, be like, oh, good God, I am so tired of parenting. Like, I can't go through this phase again. And I remember we had gone to a point that, you know, we had graduated from the coffee dates to actual a date a month type of deal. That my oldest, he was 7, and he got cutely dressed up for his babysitter and everything, and he would come down and he actually would tell us, hey, it's been a month. Have you not gone on your date yet? Or why aren't you guys not going out on your date? But the point is that you are putting your relationship first, right? But you're doing it when you're making 10, 15 minutes time for it. It's not this huge thing that, you know, the dad wants to thank. So here is the thing that Valentine's dinner, right? He wanted to thank me. He understood. He had seen the sutures. He had understood that. But I wasn't in that place. And that's why I'm like coffee dates. Just coffee dates are simple or easy. Also, as a mom, I mean, I just felt like, how can I leave my baby? You know, that's this right. Baby's been part of me for 9 months. How are you telling me to just leave it? And so 10 to 15 minutes doesn't sound that terrible.
I love that idea because so often I've been coaching and listening to mums for over a decade now. And one of the biggest sources of struggle and sadness and pain and worry is the massive change in their relationship. You know, it's like they may not have expected to feel the way they do in motherhood, but they know that that change is part of what is happening because they are now a mum. But they definitely didn't expect such a massive change in their relationship. I love there's research around interviewing a couple in the pregnancy stage or what they think it will happen when the baby is here, like how much they think they'll share the responsibilities, how much they think they'll share the housework when the baby is sick, who will take time off work. And in that early, you know, before the baby arrives period of time, most couples believe it's going to be equal. It's as if they set out with the best of intentions. And then in this comes, and the reality is that at the beginning, it is the birthing mother who has to do the breastfeeding. There is so much on one side. And that misunderstanding of what this really looks like right from the beginning causes such separation in that couple. I just wish that we could have that conversation earlier with both sides of the reality of what this is going to look like for a little bit. And then, as you said, it will get back to a different relationship with more time for each other. But if you could, in your work and in your perspective, if you could talk to the partner, not necessarily the mother, but if you could sort of get the partner over into one corner and say, hey, this is what's coming. This is how you will feel about it. This is what's going to be changing in you. This is what you need to do to support yourself. What would you say to them?
That's a really great question. And I'm very fortunate that the dads that I work with have actually helped me answer that question. First of all, everyone has the intention of breastfeeding. So let's kind of look at it very strategically. With breastfeeding, the dads I've worked with, they have had this notion that it's both our jobs to breastfeed because I am helping provide nutrition for my baby. It's my baby also. So what that looks like in reality is like, okay, the mom is breastfeeding and I'm just going to provide her with her nutrition. I'm going to be part of that journey. That is my job. My job is, because remember, particularly men's brain is very objective. They can't, you have to tell them stuff, right? Like it is what it is. That's where, what
solution oriented. Absolutely.
So it's like, that is for breastfeeding. We're going to breastfeed. And they use that term. We are going to breastfeed. So my job in that is to provide the nutrition and the fluids. My partner's job, the mother's job is just to nurse. That's it. That's all they're going to do. And then, you know, breastfeeding changes over time. It changes with how much, especially the newborn period, you are breastfeeding 8 to 12 times in 24 hours, but it does change over time. But this notion of that is there. This notion of, okay, you know what? I'm going to be less thinking about breastfeeding. You know, my wife wants to start pumping now. Or, you know, I will be in charge of making sure that all the bottles are clean or all the nipples are cleaned or all the storage stuff is done, because we're coming together as this is our job and this is where I'm going to do it at. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's for one thing for breastfeeding. Now, when we talk about other stuff, let's say economically and financially, okay, really to have the conversation is like, listen, first of all, when you're supporting breastfeeding, you're saving money. Okay. Yes, I know there is all this other inherent, like the breastfeeding pump, but we live in the state of Colorado. So luckily, most of those pumps are covered by insurance. There's other factors that come in. However, at the end of the day, formula feeding versus breastfeeding, there is an economical savings to that. And you can put it into, I always say, you can just put it into more food, like get the food that you want. Stop thinking that. The other thing is that for those fathers to realize that this is temporary, okay? So sometimes there is a bigger financial hit that is happening in the newborn period, but it is temporary, okay? For example, when we had the discussion about nanny and daycare, we realized that actually at the end of the day, though our nanny is costing us a little bit more, there's other inherent stuff that happens that, you know, we are protecting our kids from infections. We are coming home to our kids just being home. We have one person to rely on. Our house is a little bit more clean, but maybe the groceries are done. So sometimes what happens with those brains is that they just look at money as, okay, it's going to be this expensive, but they're forgetting to realize what is bringing underneath that parameters. So to really have those financial discussions to be like, okay, where are we going to be? So for example, if you, unfortunately, in most of our Western cultures, we're isolated from our communities, right? We need to build our communities. And one of the part of the community building is doulas. Do postpartum doulas play a really good role in this areas? And to be like, okay, well, maybe we don't need that onesie that no one's, or that really cute newborn outfit that's going to cost us $30. Maybe we should put services on our baby registry. So this conversation is already happening to be like, what do we really need in this period? Financially, economically, let's decide that. Maybe with that $30, we'll ask our friends to put into doula services because then we might get a night or two or however, wherever that works. So really kind of structuring it, the conversation. And for that brain, it's really great because they're like, okay, I know what we're going to do. This is what we really need, right? We don't need the $800 stroller. No, you guys don't need it. Sorry. You do not need the $800 stroller. Mm-hmm. Half the time you're going to be baby carrying, and by the time the baby is going to be ready to go down on a stroller, you can do an umbrella stroller. Trust me. Been there. Done it.
That's so true. I laugh.
If you can give them that they're in charge of that, they'll step up to the plate. Mm-hmm. Now, lastly, relationship, right? This is really important. Fathers need touch. They need intimacy. Initially, the first 2 weeks is the newborn, you know, just having the newborn doing that. But we forget intimacy is as simple. So when we fell in love, okay, with our partners, we didn't fell in love sexually right away. Everybody thinks intimacy is sexually. We fell in love with their mind. We fell in love with the brain. The brain is the biggest sexual organ, right? So giving hugs in this period of survivability, right? Just having that touch, having this hug to be like, no, you sit there, giving a massage, like a little nice back massage. Those are ways that you can touch your partner and like for Matresen's part, like, dude, I don't touch my breast. Things are leaking in 10 different directions. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. I would like a hug. Do you want to rub my back? Do you want to kind of play with my hair? I would like that. Because then when my body is healing, so the next thing is we talk about sex in the fourth trimester also, because we're told this narrative that at 6 weeks we go to that appointment and we're like good to go. And sometimes the healing is not done. So what does that look like, right? So it could just be, we always think about intimacy and sex at night. Well, night is really hard for mothers. It really is. But you know what? You know, the afternoon when my prolactin is really low and just feel lull, maybe me and you can take a nap together. Maybe we can just cuddle together because my body is down. Baby's going to probably be sleeping. Maybe we can just do that. And then as we progress, you know, 8, 10 weeks, let's just lie naked. Like, there does it really have to be? Let's just lie naked. And then when I feel as a mother that I'm ready, because you have allowed me the time and space, and you have worked with my biggest organ, which is my brain, and you've got me to a point where it's comfortable. And then I've allowed you to have a little bit more of the touch intimacy that you're looking for. Then we come to a spot where we could be ready to have the sexual relationships.
That is such brilliant advice. No, it is such brilliant advice, because again, I hear so often, you know, in this experience of matrescence for a woman, there's this feeling of I've lost who I used to be and I don't know when it will come back. And in these interviews that I've been doing, but also throughout the coaching over the years, there's a similar fear in the partner that will we get our intimacy back? Will we have that connection? What happened to this, to us? And if we can be reassured that it will come back, it may look different, and that's okay. And just have these baby steps to exploring how to connect again, to have these little ways of understanding, of being patient, of connecting, but knowing that it is going to be different for a little while, I think must, when the partners hear this, it would be so reassuring to know that this is normal. We will get back to who we used to be in a different way. Connecting will look different for a while. All of these reassuring things, instead of being silent about it, I think will be incredibly helpful for the dads and the partners to hear it this way.
I mean, just taking the steps, coffee dates, hugs, being part of the financial decision of breastfeeding, like doing all of those gets the dads involved in the postpartum period. So all they're not doing, we've kind of succumbed them to be like, oh, all you have to do is diaper changes. No, it's more than diaper changes. It's literally parenting your child. And it starts with the birth of that child. Actually starts beforehand, right? It starts with, okay, let's kind of really sit down and have a good discussion about what our finances will look like. You know, that's actually a very important discussion. Where can we put our resources and where we can't? And really being open and like giving your audience these really concrete steps, because yes, it will get that way. But sometimes people are like, well, how will it get that way? Okay, coffee dates. Start with small coffee dates. Starts with hugs. When your partner and you are feeling together, take a nap together, right? You know, and shift your mindset that it doesn't happen at night. It's not going to happen at night for a while. Well, why does it matter? Why can't we connect in the mornings? Why can't we not connect in the afternoons? These are narratives that are being told to us, that we could only have intimacy at night. Well, that's the wrong thing to be told. But we're recognizing where the mom's body is at and recognizing where the partners are at. And I think giving people, and particularly dads, very concrete ways of going about it also tells them, hey, so for example, I always relate it to a personal trainer. You just don't go to a personal trainer and be like, hey, I want to lose 10 pounds. And they're like, fine, go do it. But they don't give you a pathway to do it. They don't give you a pathway. They give you a pathway. They tell you what your form is. They kind of see where you are in your journey. They do your nutrition. And it's very concrete steps as taken. And this is the way that I look at it. It's like, these are concrete steps that are taken. I've had one family or one couple that, you know, they just couldn't go back to being intimate. So we just worked on being friends. Like, you guys were friends before this. So we might just have to redefine your relationship as friendship. And yeah. Would you want this for your friend? No. Then why are you wanting this for this person?
That's such a beautiful way to look at it. Thank you. I think so often I said to another one of the interviews I've done in this series, it's so sad how often this incredibly difficult transition at times of becoming a parent, because neither side have been prepared for it, neither side really understand what's happening, because we really are doing it blind and isolated. It creates this space between these two new couples, these two new parents, that is so sad and heartbreaking, because ultimately, if they could do it together, if they could understand that the other one's probably just as scared and unsure, the other one's worried about just as much as as I am, they'd be able to come together in such a beautiful way and move through this. And as part of this work, I would love for that to be clear, that we're not only not doing this well for the mother, but we aren't doing it well for the partner either. And if we could understand those changes, understand the deep financial pressure he may be feeling, how he may have birth trauma from seeing what his partner has been through and how scary it was in those moments. If we can have those conversations as well, then hopefully we can come together and change the experience for all of us, for all families. So I love the way you've described this and the work that you're doing in this area.
Yeah. I mean, it's been wonderful, like literally just to kind of discover Matrescence, I think. Just like you, matrescence has been something that I've been working on myself as well, realizing, you know, I'm still going through matrescence in some Me levels, too. Right? Yeah. So it's been really great. And then having, like you said, having those conversations and laying it out. So there's always been negatives and positives, right? So one of the negative things that happened was my husband had a conference 2 months after my baby was born, or after our baby was born. And this is when I had a grade 3, grade 4. And I was livid because he forgot to tell me about it. And those are the things, like, you literally have to look at your 6-month schedule after the baby's born and really talk about, okay, and reward yourself. So going back to the breastfeeding and the economical savings of it, fine. If you saved $100 per month, guess what? At 6 months, take that $100, that's $600. Go have fun with it, mm-hmm. right? Kind of have those kind of ways also to be like, hey, we're going to go celebrate what we both went through.
So. Yes. Yes. Because you've both just been through one of the biggest changes you will ever been through. And it's hard and it's isolating. And if we could just understand it a little bit better for each other, then hopefully they'll come together. I love the work that you're doing. In the notes, I will put links to your TED talk, to your work with the fourth trimester now and everything you have said about matrescence, and especially with the wisdom that you bring to this as a mama of four and how you've seen this experience yourself and then the work that you now do with families. So thank you so much for this beautiful insight.
Well, thank you so much for having me and giving me the platform to really talk about it too. This is incredible.
Thanks, as always, for being a part of our global matrescence community. Please take a moment and make sure you're subscribed to this podcast in your podcast player so you can always be notified of our next episode. And if you would like to work with a coach on your own experience of matrescence, please go to mamarising.net and explore our directory of phenomenal coaches, workshop leaders, space holders and facilitators around the globe. You can also explore our Global Matrescence Foundation and consider donating so a mama in need can access the support of one of our coaches and still ensure that our coaches receive the income and support they need so they can continue to work in this way. And finally, if you would like to be a coach, a facilitator and a matrescence activist in your own community, jump on our wait list for our next intake of the Mama Rising Facilitator Training at mamarising.net. Thank you for being here and being part of this movement. Until next week, bye.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.